Welcome to Geek Meets Social, a roundup of favorites in the world of a gamer girl, gadget-loving social media geek. Get ready as we journey through the digital life, chat with friends, and learn things. My guest this week is Mike Faber. He believes in paying it forward, being grateful, and always finding the silver lining. I've known Mike for several years, and I'm still learning new things about him. The places he's traveled, the jobs he's had, the businesses he's owned, from Hollywood to Georgia. He has done so many things. He is definitely a Mike of all trades. But before we get to our interview with Mike, let's talk about how you can pay it forward in social media. So let's pay it forward in social media. How exactly do you do that? Well, for accounts connected to your industry or to your brand, you make sure that you give them some love. Now, this could be some influencers, your top fans, even your suppliers, the cities that you have your businesses set up in. All of those are places that can help you grow your following and your business. And by supporting them in social media, that can be a boom for you. But how do you support them? Well, likes, comments, and shares are a great way to do it. Also, saves if you're on Facebook or Instagram or even Twitter /X. I'm still going to call it Twitter. But anytime that you can do any sort of engagement, it helps them. If you're watching their video, watch it all the way through or watch as much as possible because time spent watching matters in social media. So the more your followers spend time watching your video, the better off that video is getting served to other people. So if you're trying to help your following, if you're trying to help the businesses connected to you, or even the brands that you support, like their stuff, watch their videos, comment on it, share it, post it in your story if it's something that relates to you and is exciting. So let's say that you're a small business in Dallas, Georgia, and Dallas, Georgia posts something really super cool about the upcoming weekend event. Well, share that in your stories. A, it gives you some content, but it also connects you to the local area and lets you be able to say, hey, I'm a local business. Now, let's say you're trying to support your favorite artist or authors or musicians. Guess what? It's the same thing. Follow them, first off. Engage with them. Like their stuff. Comment on it. Share it. Do all those things, and it will help them be better in the organic reach that they get in social media. And hopefully by paying it forward, other accounts will pay it forward with yours. Now let's go find out more about Mike Faber of the ESO Network. Well, I'm excited to have Mike Faber with me today. We've done a lot of podcasts together, but we've never actually just been us talking about stuff. So Mike, I'm happy that you're here with me tonight.
Thank you, Tara. It's a pleasure. And it is kind of weird. It's just like, where's... you know, everybody else we're going to have discussions with, you know, we'll actually have to sit around and just chat with each other.
I know. I hope there will not be dead silence because both of us are chatters.
Oh, please. You know, I've been a talker since I've been three. So it's a good thing. And
I probably started sooner, but we'll just be quiet about that.
Exactly. Oh, so back in the dark ages, got it.
You know? Well, yes, given my age these days, it certainly feels that way. But I can always say that my brothers and sisters are older than I am.
Of course. Or as, you know, my excuse always is, you know, hey, don't blame me. I was born in the 20th century. It's okay.
Ooh, I know. It seems so weird to think about how we're in a different century. It is.
Oh, don't even, I used to like tease my son when he was little, you know, I've been alive for this many decades. And so it was always a ton of fun to be able to go to him and say, you know, I am 5 decades old, but I'm only 30 something years old. So there you go. And he just like twists his head and it's like, huh?
Look at you like Dobby does me. Like, what are you talking about?
Exactly. And then I blow his mind even more because he was born in 99. And
ooh, right before. Him,
exactly. And I told him, you're 2 centuries old already. And so it was always a fun time to do that to him. And seeing, you know, a 5-year-old's head explode is just one of the best things in the whole wide world.
Truth. Absolute truth.
It is the truth, you know.
I would, I have one sister that's 20 years older than me, and I would call her mom when I wanted to get her goat in a store.
Well, that's okay. You know, what was it, 2 years ago for my birthday, we were at a restaurant, And my lovely wife, you know, was accused of being my mother. So it's okay, by the way.
Oh, that one hurts, though.
Mm-hmm. It's like, and so I called her Mrs. Robinson after that. So it's perfect.
Could have some fun with that one.
Oh, yeah, very much so.
You know, I get called a cougar a lot in this household.
Well, look at the age difference with you and your hubby. I can understand.
It's true. He looked older.
It is, but you guys make such a cute couple, so it's okay.
Aw, thanks. You and Judy make a cute couple, too.
Sometimes, yes.
How long have you two been married?
When she remembers me, that is.
Well, there is that, but you are unforgettable, so it'll come back around.
Well, exactly. It's actually really cute, because for those who don't know out there or don't know me, my wife has epilepsy, and she has what they call focal seizures. So basically what that ends up meaning is that when she has a seizure, she doesn't fall to the ground and her hands shake and everything. She just goes blank, and it's like a hard drive rebooting herself.
That's a good way to describe it.
Yeah, and because you've seen it. And and as her brain comes back, slowly but surely, she doesn't remember where she is, or she doesn't know who she is at first. And it just slowly all comes back. And it's cute when she thinks, you know, she doesn't know me and she tries to flirt with me and everything.
That's kind of sweet.
It is sweet and everything. And it's like, and it's nice because when she does that, it's actually, you know, like, oh, I guess she's still into me. So that's good, you know?
Finding
the movie 50 First Dates. So it's okay.
It's finding that silver lining in the cloud.
Oh, you have to, you know, if you don't, you'll just sit around and go, what the hell, you know, type thing. And no, you have to look at the bright side with everything. And that's one of my things I do. It's so easy to fall into the negative. And it's one of the things I preach is you have a life, you have your health, you have everything you should be grateful for. But there's so many people out there that don't. And I try to look at the positive and everything. Because if not, you know, I'd be a wreck.
Oh, yeah, no, 100%. So I try every day to think about what I'm grateful for. And sometimes I try to keep a grateful journal, but I suck at it because, well, ADHD. But my phone keeps trying to get me to do it every day.
Aha, there you go.
One day it will happen. So have you been with Judy longer than you've been podcasting?
Oh, God, yes.
Okay, I can't remember how long the two of you have been together.
No, well, we have been together 21 years.
So just slightly.
And we've been together 21 years, and I met her 6 months after I moved to Georgia from Seattle.
That's a long ways. What brought you from Seattle to Georgia?
I came to Seattle. Oh, I lived in Seattle for about a dozen years before I moved here. And, you know, I also worked in Los Angeles during that time a bit. And I worked for the movie industry, and I also, you know, did voiceover work a little bit, but I also did some work for, I was doing work for the movie industry at the time, like designing artwork for the movies. So like when you see a magazine cover with George Clooney on it, He wasn't on the cover of Time magazine for the character he was playing. Somebody has to design it. That was me.
Oh my gosh.
If you see family pictures in the background of a movie when they're going through the house, that's me. Because I have to take their high school photos and Photoshop them together, or, you know, items like that. Or even, you know, there was an art in one of the movies I did, there was an artist doing a painting and everything. I did the painting, and the artist, the actress was, you know, just, you know, going over what I had done and everything.
I had no idea. That is so amazingly cool.
there's a whole industry for it. And, you know, there's movies out there that I could say, oh, I did the artwork for that, or I did this. And, you know, it was items like that. And it was pretty fun stuff that I did it for. And, you know, if I would have stayed, I probably would have continued doing stuff like that.
Right.
And everything. But, you know, I lived in Seattle, and, you know, I wanted to be, I had a son from a previous marriage, and I basically wanted to be a dad who was around him instead of, you know, just seeing him every other weekend or such. And flying, it got very expensive at the time from flying from Los Angeles up to Seattle every other weekend. So yeah, no. That's why I went back to Seattle. And then after a year of me being back in Seattle, the ex monster moved to Georgia. And little did she know that I had family here in Georgia already. And I also had some friends. And that was Atlanta was on one of my lists that I would say, you know, that I was going to go, hey, you know, that's a place I would want to live. So I packed up my things and I moved to Atlanta.
Wow.
And the rest is history.
And here we are many years later.
Many years later. And it's a good thing.
And didn't even meet Judy. So it made it worth it.
It did. But I've been podcasting since 2007.
So just slightly less than being married to Judy.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, like I said, I've done voiceover work in the past. I've also done, you know, radio DJing and radio announcing. And it was kind of cool because these things, podcasts, were always things that, you know, I had started listening to probably 2005 or so. And I was listening to a couple of them and I was like, you know, these guys can do it. Why can't I? And I just started learning about it, started talking to some of the podcasters I've listened to. And, you know, the hosts usually are very generous with their knowledge and everything. They want, you know, hey, sure, come on board, you know, do succeed, pay it forward, basically. And that's always been my mantra anyway. And so I basically decided, what the heck? And I took the knowledge that I did, bought my first microphone, and I became a co-host on a podcast for a little bit. And I outgrew the person real quick because I was more professional than the person was. I was more regimented on what I was going to do, what I wanted to do. And in 2010, after a lot of brainstorming, I started Earth Station One. And basically, we did Earth Station One from 2010 until the beginning of January 2024. And we did not miss one week when we did that.
Which is amazing. I mean, like, out of all the people I know in podcasting, I think you might hold the record for the most consistent, always putting out an episode, always following through. I think, I don't know anybody that has your consistency.
Yeah, it was... I don't know if it was consistency, tenacity, foolishness, you know, it's all the above. And, you know, it's cool because podcasting was always great. We had, you know, we interviewed celebrities. We had a different topic every week. And it was just a ton of fun to do. And, you know, once we started getting into... After episode 500, it almost became, you know, we might actually be doing this right or something.
There's a slight learning curve.
Oh, there's always a learning curve. Even now, you know, almost 17 years later with podcasting, I'm still learning all the time because there's new ways to do it. You know, you've taught me stuff, you know, from our chats and everything. Like about, you know, search engine optimization and, you know, tags and hashtags and getting all that out. And then also then diving into the world of video, you know.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Doing an audio podcast for so long. And, you know, it's like, as I like to say, I've got a face for radio, so it's perfect, you know. And, you know, and it's always funny when people listen to my podcast and then they meet me in person. Oh, you're not what I expected.
It's like, well, what did you expect? I will say that you have an amazing voice for podcasting, for voiceover work, for all of that. You just have this sense of calm. You should be in the Calm app reading bedtime stories.
I've actually had somebody come up to me at a con saying, I go to sleep with you every night. And I was like, excuse me?
Does
my wife know? Exactly. And the woman had to explain that her husband is an avid listener of my podcast, and he listens to the episodes when he gets home, because he's a cop up in Richmond, and when he gets home, he's to help him wind down, he listened to Earth Station One, and she said she loved hearing my voice because it helped her fall asleep, because it's, as you said, it's calming and everything. I've been told for years that I have like an NPR voice. And
oh yeah.
Exactly. And so it's interesting. And I've been told I've got a great speaking voice since I was like 17 years old, when my voice finally got deep. I used to sing in chorus and stuff in elementary school. And now I can't even hold a tune.
Little known fact, I have a choral music high school diploma.
Really?
Yeah. I was going to be a choral music teacher.
That is awesome.
I found out how much they were paid and how many there weren't.
Oh, well, I was a teacher for a while. And
what haven't you done?
Oh, wait till this hour is done. You're going to go, I am so, so educated by Mike Faber. So,
so what did you teach?
I was a special ed teacher.
Oh my gosh, bless your heart.
And I did it for 2 years and I got burnt out.
Yeah.
And I was like, I've had enough. So I went back to school and got a degree in visual arts. And a degree in visual arts with a minor in mass communication and religious studies were my...
Okay. I got the first two, but the religious studies...
I've always been fascinated by the world's religions and everything. And I actually, at one point, was almost a rabbi.
Ah, okay.
But the ex-monster that we spoke of earlier didn't feel comfortable with that. And she convinced me not to do it.
Oh.
And because I always wanted, like I said, I like always... paying it forward. It's like, right. That's why I come to talk to your classes when you always ask me. You're like, I don't even bat an eye when you say, hey, Mike, can you? And I'm like, sure. Or I go to cons and I talk about podcasting. I always do my intro to podcasting and stuff. So it's always, I've always wanted, my knowledge is stuff I've always wanted to go out to help people. It's why I work at soup kitchens sometimes. It's why, we go ahead and, help the homeless, and we donate to all these different charities and such, because we can, and it's what's good out there. But at the same time, I've always been fascinating by history. I am a history freak, type thing. I love history. So part of it is the religious part of history. And so, I wanted to learn not just about Judaism. I wanted to learn about Christianity. I wanted to learn about Hindu. I wanted to learn about Muslim. I wanted to learn about Buddhist. I wanted to know all of it. And it was fascinating to learn and everything.
I think the more we learn about other ways, the more we realize there's so many things that link us that are the same, exactly, that run through them.
Well, exactly. And that's the wonderful thing about it, is that, there is so much more than just the straight and narrow right in front of you. And you have so many people who don't know about it, and they're so, I hate to say it, ignorant about other cultures and other societies. That's why, I love to travel. Mm-hmm. I want to see, how other cultures live and everything. Some of it might be, I might go, okay, that's nice. You could keep that culture, exactly.
So. But at least
Exactly. So,
I took a lot. I took a lot of kids on study abroads, but I had one student who his family had never left like the county and surrounding areas where he lived. And all of a sudden we're dropping him in the middle of Norway.
Wow. That's a big culture shock right there.
Oh yeah. And he happens to be a person of color. He's Black. So that alone, he stands out in Norway. Mm-hmm. And he had the most amazing time. And after that, he has traveled the world because it opened his eyes to what else was out there. So I think it's super important.
That is awesome. And that's the great thing about it is there's so much of a world out there. And the world has become smaller over the last 20, 30 years because of the internet, because of video communications and other items. Even airplane travel has made it easier for us to go. You know, I've been all the way on the other side of the planet. I've been to Australia and New Zealand, and I've been through Europe. I've been, other places like Canada and Mexico and Central America. And it's just amazing to see, that it's just not America. Yay. Type thing.
Now, I think it changes who you are and it changes a part of you, because once you realize that there are other amazing things out there, like I've stood in a Buddhist temple in Japan and it is absolutely positively sacred.
Oh, of course. And you feel it too.
Yes.
That's why I loved going when I went to Europe, because everything is so old there. Oh my God, yes. And it was just wonderful to be able to feel the history. In the United States, the oldest thing is 300 years old at the most. And because I've gone to Jamestown, I've gone to Williamsburg and, places like that, which were the original colony, not the colonies, but, the original pioneering areas of where people set up their camps and everything. And that's 300 years old at the most. And, I've gone to Native American communities and, that's older than that. But when you go to Europe and you see castles that are thousands of years old or cathedrals that were from, the early, teens of the first, second century. It's just like, this is just amazing. The Roman Colosseums, or we went to see the Pantheon when we were in Greece. And it was just, just amazing to see.
It just connects you so much. I'm very much Celtic. I love traveling in Ireland, and Newgrange is older than the pyramids. Mm-hmm. And it's in Ireland, and it's amazing. And they let you go inside of it. And on the winter solstice every year, the light shines through a box at the top and illuminates the inside structure, which was probably for ritual. And it's amazing. And it's almost older than time when you're from someplace like America, where we don't have a lot of, as you said, over 300 year old artifacts lying around.
Well, exactly. And, and it's just amazing. Like you said, people who have lived in the same county, the same city, and haven't even left their state ever.
It's true.
And it's just amazing. I guess I have my parents to thank for that. The one thing I do thank them for. So it's a good thing.
They got you the traveling bug?
Oh, of course. My parents, took us on road trips everywhere. They were deadheads. So,
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. My parents were deadheads. I was at Woodstock, the original.
No.
Yes. I was 2 years old. That also shows how old I am now, if anyone wants to try to do the math. But yes, I grew up about a mile from where the original Woodstock took place, up in New York State. And it was just amazing. I told you, you're going to learn a lot.
That's just wild. Whenever I see Jerry Garcia, I do think of you. And now I know you're a second generation deadhead. That makes more sense.
Oh, of course. That's why I have him right on the wall behind me and everything. So, And it's like somebody was asking, you did a metal sculpture of yourself? And it's like, no, it's Jerry Garcia. So
that's when we feel old.
Mm-hmm, exactly. So it's pretty awesome. You know, by the time I was 18, I probably had been to 50 Grateful Dead shows.
Oh my gosh.
You know, my parents took us to go to concerts, you know, where sometimes, and you know, if you work for, you know, Child Protective Custody, anybody, please don't listen to this. My parents used to go to concerts and they used to leave me and my sister in the car sleeping in sleeping bags.
It was a different time and place. Let's just say that.
Oh, it was the 70s, folks. It was definitely a different time and place. You know, lots of aunts and uncles came into my life. Let's just say that.
I bet. I mean, and the Grateful Dead community was that. It was a community. So people knew each other, took care of each other, helped each other, which is one of the beautiful things about Deadheads.
Oh, yeah. And it's kind of cool. We're getting ready to travel up to Maine in 2 days. And we are going to be hanging with my dad's side of the family. And, you know, they were all of them were at Woodstock and everything.
All of them?
Yeah. You know, when it's a mile from your house.
No, true.
You're going to go to Woodstock. And, you know, they basically were, you know, they were there. My uncle, who owns a jewelry gallery in Manhattan now, had a kiosk at Woodstock. You know, he was selling merchandise and stuff. You know, so, you know, it's amazing how things like that evolve. And, you know, it was just, and as my uncle says, my other uncle who's now lives down here, he was like, yeah, I was at Woodstock and you know what? I don't really remember it. I just remember the smell. And you ask most people about that. They remember the dirt. They remember the mud. Do they remember the music? We've listened to the album.
Well, again, a different time, a different place.
Exactly. So it's pretty cool. So yeah, I come from a very colorful family, you could say.
Definitely more colorful than mine. My sisters would have been old enough to go enjoy Woodstock, but one of them liked the Monkees instead. Oh, I love the Monkees.
Oh, the Monkees are awesome. They should be robbed because they should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
I agree with you. And but she wasn't a Beatles fan or Hendrix or Joplin or any of that. So.
Gotcha. Well, that makes sense. And you know what? A lot of people who tried to go to Woodstock didn't make it to Woodstock because of the traffic or other things, because they literally closed the freeways and the highways getting there, because that's how many people were trying to get there.
Well, it was definitely a once in a lifetime. I mean, we have so many music festivals now, but nothing quite like that event in time.
Yeah. At the time, no. The closest thing to it at the time, where they had, what was it? I think Monterey Pop out in San Francisco. And, you know, they also had, you know, like items, they had shows like the Newport Jazz Festival and, you know, and also Newport Folk Festival. But Woodstock was, you know, they were expecting 50,000 people and they ended up getting over 500,000 people.
Slightly more.
Yeah. Just slightly. And it wasn't bad, you know, because actually I'm a historian on Woodstock. So, and on top of everything else about me, you know, but Woodstock actually was supposed to be in a different location. And it was supposed to be in a place called Walk Hill, New York. But the authorities and the townspeople were afraid of all the hippie freaks coming to their town.
I was about to say.
They canceled the permit, and this guy who lived about 40 miles away from there in Bethel, New York, where it's where I grew up, his name was Max Yasker. He owned a dairy farm, and he says, hey, I've got all this land. If you kids are going to be peaceful and everything, come on out. And the rest is history.
He had no idea.
Nope, exactly. And so many people don't know this, that Woodstock did not take place in Woodstock, New York. So
it took place in Bethel.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Which is funny because we live very close to Woodstock, Georgia, which is not the same.
It is definitely not the same.
No.
I don't even think there's a hippie or two there, so it's okay.
No, they're all down in Five Points.
Exactly.
So since
can
I think
give me a free dead ticket still? No.
I remember we used to have a stadium here. Well, you know, the Omni,
mm-hmm.
where the Hawks and the, when we had a hockey team, they would play there too. And I vividly remember from my college days when the Grateful Dead would come to town and the parking lots would be filled with vendors and people camping. And you could just watch people in suits going, oh my God, Ethel, what is going on here?
Now you have Dragon Con instead, and the people in the suits are going, Ethel, what is that person dressed as?
Why is Darth Vader here?
Exactly. But it was funny because back in from 2009 until 2012, I had worked for the state of Georgia, and I was working downtown right next to basically where the Sheraton is. And so we had access to the sidewalk going between the Sheraton and the Hilton. And people would be walking in their costumes for Dragon Con during Labor Day weekend. And people would grab me from my desk. Mike, I want you to identify these people in costume. Because at the time, I wasn't going to Dragon Con full time. I was I think I started off going Saturday and Sunday. And so, you know, it just all depends when, you know, they were. And it just, you know, people, so Friday, on Thursday and Friday, they would grab me and I would go, okay, who's that? Who's that? And yeah. And, you know, exactly. And then they're like, oh, that person's Darth Vader. That person's someone anime. If I don't recognize the costume, oh, it's just anime, you know, type thing.
That's us too.
Exactly. But it always was the funnest thing in the world during Dragon Con on Thursday and Friday when the offices were still open all around, because Dragon Con is in these hotels, but you have all of Peachtree Center, you have all these other office buildings right around there. SunTrust, when it's now Truist, had their headquarters right there. You would come go get lunch and you would see all the straights, you know, in their suits and, you know, ties and everything sitting right next to a Klingon or an Andorian slave, or, you know,
it was fabulous.
The darker days of Dragon Con when people dressed a little more risque, even,
mm-hmm.
you know, people, you know, wearing just electrical tape and stuff like that and nothing else. It was just always interesting.
Tape was a costume.
Oh, exactly. Having to explain to people, oh, that's a furry. You know, you don't want to talk to that one.
Just refer them to CSI Las Vegas, I think, was the one that had the episode.
Mm-hmm, the furry convention.
Yes. My niece was a lawyer downtown. And so her and her lawyer buddies, and she's kind of geeky too, they would always have lunch in Peachtree Plaza during Dragon Con.
Oh, that's awesome.
For the site.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty amazing. And I just, you know, it's all fun. It's just, I always loved it. I love how geekdom has grown and spread out. It's just truly amazing that it has.
Yeah. And it's not as, I was talking to our friend Anthony the other day about how he was kind of picked on because he was a Doctor Who fan. And I'd like to think that at least in older groups, we're past that point.
No, they're not. That's the sad thing about it. Oh,
I'm gonna go
come
be
on.
Sad now.
I wish it was that way. You know, it's what I hate about social media. It's all the crap that, you know, the haters, or how it's a bully forum, basically, because you can remain anonymous and talk your crap and not have to be worried about having the repercussions about it. And in all truth, it's some ways it's even worse now being a geek or liking a fandom, because if you go out there and say, oh, I I love the Acolyte for Star Wars. I think it's amazing. And then you're going to have 100 people jumping on you. Oh, it's crap. It's not what Star Wars is meant to be. It's you, you know, and it's just, it's horrible. Same thing with Doctor Who. It's Star Trek or whatever you're into. There's so much crap out there. And I try to stay away from it and not get involved with it. We've actually had to ban somebody from Earth Station Who's Facebook group because the person was becoming way too negative, homophobic, and, you know, just not positive at all. And it's okay to have a differing opinion.
Right. Absolutely.
I want to be around people who have differing opinions. I love that. I think it's amazing when you have that. But if anything you post comes out, coming out, I don't want that. And I don't want that in my groups or in my life.
Yeah.
And everything. And, you know, and it's the horrible thing about social media. You kind of find out what sometimes people you think are decent people are really life. You know?
No, it's completely true. And I think the toxicity within fandoms now is just huge. Right. And for some of them, if you're a new fan, they gatekeep. Don't gatekeep your geekydom. Let people enjoy it, introduce them, explain it to them.
Well, exactly. And, you know, as like I told this person, it's like the great thing about Doctor Who, it's about change. It's a 60-year-old TV show where the main character changes every 3 to 5 years. Yeah. And, you know, you have a different actor or actress playing the lead role. And you know what? If you don't like that person who's playing the Doctor,
just wait
3 years. Exactly. It's going to be somebody completely new, and the show's going to go a completely different direction. So
I have to ask, since we're talking about Doctor Who, I have two questions. One, sure. Who was your first Doctor?
Tom Baker, the fourth Doctor.
Me too.
I discovered him on WOR in New York.
Ooh.
And because I grew up outside of Washington, D.C., and I think, you know, my parents were deadheads and everything, and they took off quite a bit. And so they stuck me and my sister in front of the TV as, you know, to be the babysitter. And we were able to have on the cable system we had was WOR. And I discovered an episode of Doctor Who called The Talons of Wei Chiang. And it was Tom Baker basically and his companion Leela going back to the late 1800s, and it is such a racist show and an episode that, you know, they had white people dressed in Asian makeup and everything. And it was just, it was really, really bad. But for a kid, there was ninjas, there was giant rats, there was a midget. It was, little person. And it was just, it was pretty amazing to see at 8 years old. And so, but then, you know, being 8 years old, I lost it. You know, I didn't see it for like 2 years. And then PBS in Washington, D.C. started showing at 11 p.m. every night on Monday through Thursday. They started showing Doctor Who in its original 30-minute segments and ended with the cliffhangers and everything. So I was able to watch Doctor Who, and it's literally history from there.
Georgia Public Broadcasting, PBS here, was how I found them too.
Mm-hmm. But they didn't PBS though down here do combine them all into one stories?
I think they did. I know Tom was my first Doctor, but I can't remember the episodes at all. Mm-hmm. I remember Peter Davidson better, because then I watched All Creatures Great and Small after he was in Doctor Who.
Sense. I watched it too, and it was funny because the only time because they only showed on the PBS station where I grew up, they only showed the Tom Baker episodes, and they showed them from Robot all the way to Legopolis. And then they restarted all the way back and everything. So, because I think that's all they had the rights to. But I knew that Tom had already left because we saw Legopolis and he changed into Peter. And he basically we didn't get to see those. We got to see the Peter Davison episodes at pledge time.
Oh, yeah.
And that's when you, hey, we got brand new Doctor Who. All you have to do is, you know, if you want to see these, donate, please. And, you know, being 12 years old, I'm not going, Mom, can I have your credit card?
We need to donate to public broadcasting.
Exactly.
Now so, we have a Brit channel, so.
We have a Brit channel. We have HBO Max for the new series. And now we have Disney Plus for the brand new series. So.
Which is crazy to me that it's on Disney Plus. I mean, I'm super happy because we have Disney Plus.
Oh, Disney's been trying to get Doctor Who for years.
I didn't know that.
Yes. Well, you know, Doctor Who did get canceled in 1988.
Yes, I knew that.
And it basically briefly came back in 96 as a TV movie with Paul McGann as the Doctor.
I have not seen that one.
And stick with me. I'll lend you a copy of it. Okay. And then it came back full time in 2005 with Christopher Eccleston as the Doctor. And he, you know, and so going forward, boom, you have new series. And which is kind of weird that, you know, next year is the 20th anniversary of Doctor Who coming back already.
It's crazy. And you think of how old the show is and how long it's been around and just how much it's changed.
The show has, you know, just celebrated last November its 60th anniversary.
Crazy.
Yeah. Okay. So it's pretty cool stuff.
So what do you think of the new Doctor?
Love him.
I do too.
I think he is amazing. Shuti Gatwa is a amazing actor, and I hope he stays a lot longer than 3 years.
Me too.
Because, you know, and since Doctor Who's come back, it's usually been three and done with Doctor Who. And I would love to see him come back, stay on longer than that and break that tradition. Because just when you're getting really in love with the Doctor, they change. And it's like, no.
Tracks. You know,
exactly. You know, I would have loved to seen Jodie stay longer. I would have loved to see Peter stay longer. We got Matt Smith and I loved him.
I would have loved
to get him more. But, you know, and then David Tennant, you know, he just can't leave the role. So it's okay.
I love it when David comes back though.
Yeah, well, I think everybody does. There's, you know, so many David Tennant fangirls out there. And when I say David Tennant fangirls, I mean male and female. So
I'm there completely.
I kind of figured.
Yeah, no. And he does an amazing podcast, too. I just wish he'd come out with a third season. But since we don't have a pandemic anymore, there's no more podcast.
Oh, he's too busy. You know?
Oh, yes. He's wonderful. But I adore. Like, I was not a big Peter Capaldi fan. I liked him, but I thought he's very serious. And I like my doctor a little bit more.
He grew on me. He grew on me.
Did he? Yes. I tried. But we've religiously watched since they started with the anniversary special with Tennant coming back and with the new doctor. And he's amazing. We watched the episodes and I think it's some of the best that I've seen in a long time.
Oh, yeah. Very much so. That's why I do Earth Station Who, you know, so because that was a spinoff of Earth Station One. Because originally when Earth Station One first started, we did a review. We also of a movie or a TV show. Then we each week talked about an episode of Doctor Who. And then we did an interview. We did over a 2-hour podcast at first.
You had a variety show.
Yeah, exactly. And it's Earth Station One. I used to tell people it's like a magazine show. It has different segments on it. And we used to timestamp it. So that way, if somebody didn't want to listen to a segment of it, they could skip to the next part and everything. Because not all the times they would want to hear us talking about a certain topic, whatever. But we, around episode 100 of Earth Station One, people were going, you know, I love your show, but you guys talk way too much about Doctor Who. Why don't you do a Doctor Who show? And I was like, you know what? That's a great idea. And I spun Earth Station Who off of Earth Station One And we started reviewing Doctor Who throughout the years. And so we've done that, and we've gotten, that's been going for 12 years now. And it's, we're up to, but we do that every other week. So we don't do that weekly because I'd be going insane. And the only time we do it weekly is when new Doctor Who is on, because we want to keep up with it.
That makes sense.
Exactly. And so when we spun the show off, I had a friend, Dr. Scott Vigay, and he was like starting up a podcast called Dr. Geek's Science Lab. And he said, hey, you have two shows. Would you want maybe me to join up with you guys? And you guys could form a network. And I was like, oh, that's not a bad idea. And right about that same time, I was at TimeGate, which later became Wholanta, and I met this couple named Jason and Rita Della Torre, and they were starting a podcast called Transmissions from Atlantis. And, you know, I meet people when I do my podcasting panels and stuff, because I was even doing them back then. And, oh, yeah, we're thinking about doing a podcast. And, you know, and I said, cool, when you guys get up and started and want to do it, you know, drop me a line. I'll listen to your podcast. Within 2 days, Jason and Rita had their first episode ready.
Oh, that's awesome.
Based off the advice I had given them.
Right.
And they were the fourth show to join ESO. Because, you know, we took anybody back then. So.
Well, that explains how the network came about. Because now, how many shows do you have now on ESO Network?
Right now, we are 20 shows. But... you know, we have shows like the Dragon Con Report. We have Still Earth Station Who. We have Tales from Hollywood Land. We have, what else do we have? The Rusted Robot Podcast. We have Soul Forge Podcast. We have the 42 Cast. We have the Flop Cast. Yes. You know, we've been up to like 42 different podcasts on the network at one time.
That's a lot.
But because of the joy of podcasting is a lot of times podcasts don't last more than a year or two.
Yeah.
And, you know, it takes crazy people to go further with that. Especially
like if you.
Exactly. Especially if you're not making money like crazy like me with that. And so it's just, you know, it's a labor of love. Or as Judy calls it, my very expensive hobby.
So. With a tax write-off.
Oh, exactly, which is wonderful.
Yeah, we got to do something. So I know Tales from Hollywood Land has been like your latest new project.
Yes.
I know you're enjoying it because it's just, it's awesome. And so tell us a little bit about how you've transitioned kind of into producing.
It's interesting because, you know, I've been saying throughout the show already, I've been podcasting and hosting for years. And I also like running a very tight ship. I also like having a clean podcast, good audio, good, you know, good intros and outros, good pacing shows, and not like some podcasts where it just feels like you're listening to paint dry. And it's, you know, and there are some out there that are
Sad,
which is really sad. But, you know, I put myself out there because for years now I've been behind doing some behind the scenes work producing shows. I've always produced Earth Station One and Earth Station Who, but I've also was producing the Dragon Con Report for years. And so I've always done it, and I started slowly becoming more of a behind the scenes producer for the Dragon Con Report. And I also did some, you know, producing of some other podcasts. Like we had a wrestling podcast on the network at one point, and I produced that for them. And I also produced a burlesque podcast for years, a couple of years, because it was called Atlanta Burlesque. And I did that. And I was helping, you know, the hosts out, giving them advice, working on their sound, on their quality and everything. And it's what I do for pretty much everyone on the network. And I had been working with a couple different people, and they recommended me to this guy named Steven Rubin, who was a movie producer. And he worked on movies like, you know, Honey, I Blew Up the Kids. And he also worked on some other movies in Hollywood for Showtime. And he also used to work for Starlog magazine. And he also wrote a couple books on James Bond. And him and I became friendly. And he said, I'm thinking about starting a podcast. Would you want to produce it for me? And I was like, sure, I'd be glad to, you know? And so I met him and he had his co-hosts, Arthur Friedman and Julian Sloshman. And Julian used to host radio shows in New York City, and he used to interview celebrities. And he did it from the like early 1970s into the early 80s. But he also used to be a movie producer, and he also used to produce for Broadway.
Oh.
So it's pretty cool stuff. And same thing with Arthur. He used to work in the movie industry. So these guys are veterans and everything. And so we came up with Tales from Hollywood Land about a year ago. And they've so far recorded and put out 46 episodes.
That's amazing.
And so I'm producing their podcast for them and getting them out there. And every once in a while, I pop up to talk about if it's a discussion that I'm interested in or have knowledge on. And I also do the announcing for the opening and closing for them.
That wonderful voiceover voice that you have.
Exactly. And then, you know, I can get really deep. Yeah. So it's pretty cool.
I know Earth Station 1 is on hiatus. Do you think it's ever going to come back?
Probably not. Yeah, I don't think so. I think it had its time. Mm-hmm. And it might pop up, you know, every once in a while in some form or another. And, you know, but, you know, it might, if we can get a good interview, if like Kevin Smith came to me tomorrow and said, hey, Mike, hey, how's it going? You know, I really would like to be on Earth Station 1. And I'd be going, oh, okay.
Rebooting right now. Here, rebooting.
Twist my arm. Yeah, exactly. I still have the feed. I still have all the, you know, all the absolutely. Sound stuff for it. And, you know, it might pop up, you know, but right now I'm in talks to possibly produce another podcast.
Ooh.
And for somebody who, and I can't name names yet, He used to be a talk show host in the 1970s and 80s on TV.
Nice.
And so, and he's looking to do a podcast. And so there might be a possibility with me moving forward with him to do something. But there's also, and then I'm working with an idea for producing a show for my wife. So, you know, so we'll Aww. See.
I would love to have Judy behind the mic.
She's always behind the mic, you know.
You just never know what's going to come out of her mouth.
Oh, that's so damn true. And that's kind of cool stuff. But it's always fun because I love podcasting and I enjoy talking to people. I enjoy just conversations. And there's so much good conversation to have. And it's pretty amazing that you're able to enjoy that, talk with it. And you know what? The joy of the podcasting is you never know what you're going to get. You never know with any episode. And it can turn into something that you never can expect. Or it could be some of the most, okay, we're talking. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh. And never, you know, if you're going to podcast kids, don't give one-word answers. Please don't do that.
Oh, for the love of God. And don't push your stuff every two sentences.
No. But, you know, and then, you know, there is the ESO network, which is always great with it. Oh, and did I mention the ESO network? You know.
You know, it's out there, the ESO network. I hear that it has lots of shows.
Exactly.
Including Tales from Hollywood Land.
Exactly. And also amazing other shows. But, you know. Neither here nor there, but more about me. Right. Of course.
That's it. So what's next for Mike?
That's always the million-dollar question. I've got plans. I've Ooh. Got ideas. And, you know, it's, I've actually started playing with the idea of getting back into filmmaking even.
Oh, wow.
I almost did a documentary about 12 years ago about Guy Fieri. Because, you know, he has a TV show, Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives.
Oh, yeah.
I was going to do an episode of a documentary called Guy Ate Here. And basically the tales of Triple D, and go back to the places that he actually visited on the show, and actually finding out what happened to these places. Did it help your business? Did it not? Or was it just a bump in the road? And I had funding for it. I actually had started talking to some restaurant owners, and they were very open to talk to me about it and everything, and even film in their restaurants and stuff. But the grant then that I had, because of a change of administrations, kind of dried up. And so basically the funding died on it, and the project went pfft. So I've got so many different ideas and everything. So
just all the things running around in Mike's brain.
Oh, you would be scared if you knew it was running around in Mike's brain.
Well, I know I learned things about you today that I had no clue on. I mean, I know that, didn't you used to own a movie theater?
I did. I owned a movie theater in the early 90s, and it was located about 10 miles outside of Baltimore. And it was myself and some of my friends from college. And it was not just a classic movie house, but it was also a comic book store.
Oh.
And so we were in double trouble, and we used to play like second run movies. We had Rocky Horror on the weekends.
Nice. And
it was good. And I sold my portion of it when I moved to Seattle. And then the person I sold it to ended up not knowing how to run a business, really. And
ow.
The place became very heavily in debt. And he tried having me come back on board to help save it. But it was already too late.
I'm sorry. But at least
because it was a lot of sweat and equity went into that, and a comic collection or two.
Oh, absolutely! Like, I didn't know you were into comics.
Oh yeah, I've been collecting comics since I was wee high, you know, as they like to say. Yeah, my grandmother used to take me to Krauser's in New Jersey, and you know, the local convenience store, and we'd go buy comics, you know, every time I came to visit her.
So what comic from your youth do you remember the most?
Oof. I had a lot of stuff. Now that when I go to comic shows, I cry when I see how expensive they are now and how much they're worth.
Right.
There's a lot of them I kept for many years, but you know, I had the original Star Wars run that Marvel Comics did. I had like Amazing Spider-Man from like issue probably 60 or something up at the time. I had Fantastic Four. I had Superman. I had all those kind of stuff, and they were just sitting, you know, not in piles in my room growing up.
Right.
Before I discovered comic book boxes and boarding and, you know, covers and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, it's just pretty awesome. And I just, you know, I had some really neat experiences owning a store, and I had some not so nice experiences owning a store, you know? So, but it was neat to do. And I loved the idea of it. I loved meeting the people who were into it. And it's the same reason I like podcasting. It's, you know, just meeting new people all the time.
Well,
it was interesting too, because, I'm sorry to interrupt.
No.
It was neat because I was owning a comic book store when the industry was changing. And it went from a lot of guy-focused comics and such, where guys would come into the stores and they drag their girlfriends along,
right,
or anything. And it was like, that's the only time they would ever come, women would ever come in, to, oh, the new issue of Sandman is out. Oh, ElfQuest. Oh, Cerebus. Oh, you know, all this independent comics or more adult type comics that were not spandex superheroes. And women started coming in as collectors, and it was awesome. It was an amazing change in the industry, and it was neat to see.
I had not been exposed to many comic books until Darren, our mutual friend who passed away a little while ago. Mm-hmm. And I still remember him going and getting his weekly comic books.
Oh, yeah. I could understand that. He was a collector's collector.
Yes. Yeah.
And that was pretty awesome. I miss him.
I do, too. He's the reason I actually have Batman comics.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So, yeah, give me tall, dark, and brooding and that, you know.
That's where you're married to Shane, right?
I married that, though. So.
Yeah, exactly. Shane, how are you? I'm fine. Thanks.
Yes, I refer to him as my big Yeti and sometimes my grumpy Donald Duck.
I could see it. I saw it the other night.
Oh, yeah. Bless his heart.
Yes.
Thankfully, he'll never hear this because I love him and he's very supportive, but he does not listen.
Oh.
No.
No. Not at all.
Where can people find you out there on the World Wide Web?
Well, I am on Facebook. I am on Instagram, usually Mike Faber, or it's either that or Mike Faber 67 up for social media. Used to be up on Twitter, but I don't believe in that anymore because it's X. And so
we don't call it that.
Nope. And, you know, otherwise you could find me as part of the ESO network, esonetwork.com, or you could also find me at, you know, Tales from Hollywoodland or Earth Station Who. And each one of those are wherever fine podcasts are found. And actually, Judy and I just started a YouTube channel with all the concerts that we go to. We videotape different songs from it, and it's called Wandering with Mike and Judy.
Aw, you guys go to so many concerts.
We're both music freaks, and, you know, we love going to see live music, and it's one of our enjoyments. You know, it's something I picked up from my parents. And, you know, I don't have a kid anymore, and I don't have, you know, tons of bills. So we use our money instead of buying a new TV or buying, you know, all this crap. We go see live music or we travel, and it's pretty darn awesome. You know, we have concerts, you know, right now scheduled all the way through November. So
what are you looking forward to the most?
Oof, that's a good question, because we keep on having new and new shows. I know right before Dragon Con, or actually right after Dragon Con, we're going to the Variety Playhouse in here in Atlanta, and we're going to see Puddle's Pity Party.
Ooh.
For those who don't know what Puddles is, he is a 7-foot tall clown with the voice of an angel. He is truly, truly amazing.
Well, I know you're going to enjoy that.
Oh, yeah. And taking Judy to see Electric Light Orchestra when they come to town. We got tickets to go see, you know, we're going to go see, you know, concerts, you know, just we like all different types of music. And it's pretty amazing, you know, the different genres. And we don't mind driving a little bit to go see music either. And that's part of the fun of what we do. So, you know, there's just so much good coming. Awesome.
We'll have to find some Wandering with Mike and Judy. But mm-hmm. If I had to think anything of you, I think you're Mike of all trades.
Mike of all trades. That should be my new handle. Mike of all trades.
So. Better than Jack.
Exactly. Jack can go. And never mind. I won't say that.
That's not. We'd have to change the rating of the podcast.
I'm being very good. You have to realize that. So
you can imagine I am too, because we all know what my favorite word is.
Oh, we do. I know what you're like when you drink, so it's a good thing.
We'll talk about that later. Anyway, thanks for dropping in. I've had a ball and I've loved learning more about Mike.
It's been a pleasure. It's always great to talk to you, Tyra. And you know what? We should do this again sometime.
We should.
So, you know, I will have to tell you about going to New Zealand and actually watching them film Lord of the Rings. But that's for another episode.
For another episode to be continued.
Spoilers.
I can't thank Mike enough for joining me this episode. Check out his stuff at the links that you're going to find in our show notes, which are at geekmeetsocial.com or tyraburton.com. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast and leave a review. And if you've got any feedback, you can send it to us on the web or at tyra@tyraburton.com. Can't wait to hear from you next episode. Take care.